Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have David Burton on with his DVD and film Ingredients with Greed, G-R-E-E-D. David is... I'm sorry?
Thank you very much, Dr. Kolb.
Thanks, David, for joining us today. David, I understand you're an RN who became interested in why you didn't know about trans fats. Is that correct?
That is very true. I'm a registered nurse. I work at local community hospitals for about 6 years now, and I started learning a little bit about trans fats, and that was the big question. Why aren't healthcare professionals taught these things about nutrition? That was kind of the spark that got the whole ingredients train moving.
Well, I was an MD, and I really didn't understand anything about trans fats until I interviewed Dr. Andrew Weil on my radio show. I mean, I'm sorry, that was actually my TV show. And I was just amazed that we've been eating trans fats probably since the 60s at least. Would you like to tell our audience a little bit about what trans fats are and how they got into our diet?
Yeah, unfortunately, here in America, we've been eating trans fats since the introduction of Crisco. It was right in the 50s, and really what a trans fat is, the simplest way to find out if you're eating trans fats, is they come from partially hydrogenated oils or hydrogenated oils. Both of them are really bad for you. So what we do in our movie is try to get people to read the ingredients on their food and search out for these partially hydrogenated oils, because unfortunately they're still allowed to be used in the food supply. That was one of the most confusing parts of all our research, is if the folks up at Harvard have done 30-year studies and proven them to be toxic, and cities like New York City and states like California are starting to ban them, well, why on earth are they still even being allowed to use? So that's another big part of the movie as well. So, yeah, right about 50s, we started eating them. 60s and 70s, they became really, really heavily influenced in our diet, and that correlates perfectly with when heart disease and diabetes and obesity really started taking over all the American population.
And when it's all together, it's called metabolic syndrome.
That's exactly
the new science of it. Metabolic syndrome means that your metabolism is being disturbed, and trans fats being not natural fats, very unnatural fats, have been linked to all three components of metabolic syndrome. I want to talk a minute about why the companies are allowed to put 0 grams trans fat on the label when they can have up to, 0.5 grams in the product? Is that pretty
interesting? Yeah, that was a very, very alarming fact when we found out about how the labeling laws are actually written. And we can thank our FDA for that. They somehow were convinced by the food corporations that as long as there was less than 0.5 gram per trans fat in a serving, they were allowed to put 0 on the label. And this really allowed the food corporations to drag their feet on getting this toxin out of our food supply. This is just a huge problem because it was finally exposed. Hey, we can't eat hydrogenated oils. Trans fats are bad. The whole metabolic system, like you were talking about. But what they have been doing is reducing serving sizes and reducing the numbers so that they can get it down to, say, 0.3 or 0.4 or just under 0.5 grams of trans in a serving, and then they're allowed to mark it as 0. And this
serving may be a couple of tablespoons.
A serving could be a tablespoon, and many people eat several servings in a sitting.
Right.
And furthermore, the most dangerous part is we're combining foods. So if you say you're taking your pancake mix, and that has just under 0.5 gram in a serving, and then maybe you've got some syrup that has just under 0.5 gram per serving, and now maybe... you know what I'm saying? So you have three or four different items. All of a sudden, you're up to 2 grams of trans fat in one meal, all from products that were labeled as 0. That's really dangerous when people think they're not eating something and they're taking in quite a bit of it.
And you had some scientists and doctors take a look at how much trans fat it takes on a daily basis to develop this problem? And what would you say that the estimated thing that they were saying on your film?
Yeah, we were quite fortunate when we flew up to Maryland to meet Dr. Mary Enig, who is probably the most world-renowned expert on fats and mm-hmm. how fats are important in your diet. And she kind of blew the whistle on this a long time ago, and we met with her, and she recommended us to go right over to University of Maryland and talk to Dr. Beverly Teeter, who kind of picked up where she left off and doing a lot of research on trans. And we were chatting with her, and we just asked her if she would test a couple of foods, and she was more than happy to do it for us. So we went out and purchased, say, Kentucky Fried Chicken, some Wendy's fries, the Crisco that says 0 grams of trans. We had maybe half a dozen food items that all said 0 grams of trans fat.
Right.
But we know they have partially hydrogenated oil. Mm-hmm. And when she tested them, they came back as 0.2, 0.3, even up to 0.46 grams of trans fat,
yeah.
which is just barely under 5. So that's obviously manipulated by the food company to get it just under that 0.5. Package it up in their neat little 0 grams package and get it on the market for you.
So probably reading labels isn't enough. You might just have to avoid processed foods in general unless you absolutely know from the food manufacturer that this isn't happening. Maybe because they're, you know, more of a health food manufacturer.
Yeah, everything goes in steps. So a lot of times when this is really new to somebody, they watch my movie and they understand, wow, I got to start reading my labels. I really got to pick up on these things.
Right.
And as they start doing it, if you really start reading the label on everything you buy, you start coming to that conclusion that you just said. You're looking for partially hydrogenated oil to make sure you're not eating it. But what people are coming to back to me is saying, David, I was looking for my hydrogenated oil, and I found all these other things. What is polysorbate 60 and monosodium glutamate and TBQH and all these different additives? And they really start realizing, wow, maybe processed food just isn't what I should be eating, and really getting back to that whole natural food diet.
Yeah, I was interviewing Dr. Hildegard Staninger, and she goes, do you know what modified cornstarch is? And I said, nope, she said, plastic. And so I went to this Target and looked, and every single thing I was looking at was modified cornstarch. Even yogurt and things that are supposed to be healthy for you. And what's interesting is, of course, the FDA, bless their hearts, has not required GM foods or nanotechnology to be labeled on anything either. And so you probably, the corn in that high fructose corn syrup and the modified corn starch is GM corn, which means that you may be taking in a corn that is really causing inflammation and allergies. I'm giving a talk on this at TruthCon, which is a convention here in Atlanta on the 4th and 5th. And I wrote a book on breast implants, and they asked me to talk on that, but not that many people have breast implants. So I decided to expand it to what you do not know about what you put in your body. So I've been researching not only all about the FDA, but researching personal care products, cosmetics, food, everything. And I'll tell you, it's very interesting. You could do a number of additional films on, you know, the rest of the story. It's a lot bigger than just trans fats and additives.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It's like a lot of people use trans fats as their kickoff. I'm going to remove this from my diet, and that kind of gets them mm-hmm. started on the cascade of changing their whole lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done the same for me. I'm working on my next movie, which is going to be all about sugar and sugar addiction and corn syrup, and is corn syrup really as bad as they're saying, and all the artificial sweeteners.
Well, high fructose corn syrup is. A lot of people are allergic to it. I know I am. And one of the things that an allergy to high fructose corn syrup causes is a problem with copper and zinc. So, there are probably a lot of allergies because of the genetically modified thing, because we get a lot more allergic to genetically modified foods than we do non-genetically modified foods. And right now, 80% of the corn in the U.S. is estimated to be contaminated with the BT toxin.
Yeah, and I think a lot more people are allergic than realize. It's not the type of algae where you eat this and you're going to break out in a rash. Yeah, and well, I tell a lot of people is you don't know how bad you feel until you start feeling good. If you're going through your life and you're miserable and you're sick and you feel a whole lot worse than you actually believe until you start feeling good and getting your health back.
So really, most people who really take this seriously end up changing their diet to not only organic but whole foods, more fresh and not non-cooked foods, and no processed foods, including processed meats, which can be particularly interesting because they spray them with a viral phage meant to prevent listeria infections. Dr. Staninger talked about this on the show, and that is coated with high-density polyethylene, and which is a plastic, and the fibers in Morgellons disease, which she and I both study, are high-density polyethylene and silicone. Isn't that interesting? she analyzed
them. I really believe that this is a step-by-step process. If people try to say, okay, that's it, I'm changing my diet, and I'm not going to eat hydrogenated oils or corn syrup or genetically modified foods or aspartame or meat or sugar, it takes so long. So what I recommend people is to pick a new additive each month or each couple of weeks and really get a handle on it. Really get the hydrogenated oils completely out of your diet. And once you're comfortable with that, move to corn syrup. And then once the corn syrup's out, move to aspartame. And once aspartame's out, move to MSG and start cutting down on the amount of meat you eat and trying to switch to just organic meats, because those factory farms are just putting out a really, really toxic product with the majority of the meat on the grocery store shelves. And it's been proven that the majority of our diet should come from fruits and vegetables and whole grains. And not that we shouldn't eat meat at all. Not, you know, I have a lot of friends that are vegetarians and vegans, and they're quite healthy. And I have a lot of friends that do eat meat occasionally, and they're pretty healthy too. But definitely should be getting the organic meats. And I know they're not as easy to come by, and they're expensive, but it's a step-by-step process. And a lot of people complain that they can't afford to eat good food, and it's just not true. In reality, you can't afford not to.
Yeah, the cost of health care later on is tremendous. I mean, look at the healthcare situation now. I asked my anesthesiologist, who's really up on all these things. I'm a surgeon, so we were in surgery 17 hours doing a couple of cases right after the snowstorm here. And so I asked him, what is going to happen with the healthcare bill? And this is what he said. It's kind of interesting. He said, well, the House will vote to repeal it, which happened. But the Senate won't. But do you know who funds bills? The House. So if the House refuses to fund it, it will die. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, it is.
I mean, because I don't think either the House or the Senate has enough votes to veto, you know, to get past the veto that the President will do. But, I mean, I just am amazed sometimes at his knowledge of how things work. And he just says, well, no, they just won't fund it. So you know what? If you're thinking that universal health care is gonna be available for everybody in the future and you won't have to worry about your health care bills, think again.
you know?
It may not be true.
I don't believe it is. It's a very, very complicated system.
It is.
I think the bottom line is that the system is very broken, the health care system, but it's extremely profitable for a few. So nobody's working on really fixing it. People are trying to fix it, but the people that can fix it are making so much money the way it is right now, it's going to be a while before it gets fixed, and it may never.
Yeah.
So you have to take responsibility for what you're putting in your body, and you have to take responsibility for your own health. You can't just say, hey,
I'll get my coronary artery bypass later.
And a lot of people have that attitude, and I don't understand why. We're completely breaking the system on it. We don't have the money to keep on putting in a cardiac stent on every person. There's 300 million Americans, and we can't treat them all for heart disease, diabetes.
Not just one, multiple.
Yeah.
You know, they don't last that long. And the other thing, and I'm just going to give this out to the listeners, because both my mother and my father had coronary artery bypasses, so I know how much it cost. When it wasn't on Medicare, it was about $70,000. On Medicare, it's $35,000. That's what a coronary artery bypass surgery costs. I mean, think about that and multiply it by the number of people in Medicare. And if people can have more than one coronary artery bypass, or they could have several stents leading up to it. Tremendously expensive.
And that's almost always how it happens. It's a step-by-step.
Yes.
We put a stent,
right.
You get your second one. By the time your third one, well, now it's time for the open heart. And, yeah, you're quickly up to $100,000.
And if we do get universal health care, certain portions of the population at past certain ages won't get these things. They'll get pain medicine.
That's what they do in Europe.
They'll get pain medicine, which is cheaper. And then they'll die or they'll suffer. I mean, a lot of people with heart disease that's not repairable suffer a great deal before they die. They can't walk to the bathroom, you know. They're crippled, cardiac cripples, and I know you know about them. People think heart attack, oh, I'll just die quickly, it'll be no big deal. And not always.
No,
you
congestive
can suffer
heart
for
failure.
10 years, you know.
It's a very miserable process when your heart can't pump the amount of blood out and you're constantly have the fluid backing up to your lungs and you can't breathe. It's a very, very uncomfortable situation.
Yes, we're sitting up. You know. You've seen them. So, you know, it really is true. People should not depend on Medicare, which they do. They should not, because it's going to go, I mean, there's not enough money to fund Medicare when people like myself, the baby boomers, hit it. They should not depend on universal health care because it may or may not be there for them, and if they're older, it may elect not to treat them, which is in the bill. So that's interesting. And
that's the only way.
I'm sorry?
That's the only way it would work. It's just not enough money to fix everybody like that.
Where we can do what Andrew Weil suggested, I think it was around early 2000, 2001, I interviewed him on his books. I think it was Spontaneous Healing, but he thought trans fats was one of the biggest problems that Americans faced with their health, and he was probably right. I mean, trans fats are probably at the core of the number one killer, and maybe a couple of them in the top 10. So
that's really why we made a movie almost primarily about the hydrogenated oils, because it's also just a really good example of how the system works, especially when you look at how many deaths it's causing, how many different diseases it's linked with,
mm-hmm.
how much money it's causing us to treat these diseases. And then, like I said before, you've got people proving that this additive is toxic and causing these diseases, but still is allowed to be used.
That says a lot about our system. But, you know, I mean, conspiracy theories aside, there are portions of the I would say, academic and more people that investigate things more that have suggested that maybe population control through these methods is one of the agendas. So, you know, it would make sense that if population control is more important than other things like protecting the public's health, these things may be allowed on the market. Or it may just be greed, like you say. It may just be that the companies buy the FDA and buy the other regulatory agencies and buy the politicians, and then they're allowed to say, you know, 0.4 is equal to zero.
Well, there's just so much more money in treatment versus prevention. If we prevent diseases, we can't make money on them. And if we keep allowing people to get as sick as they are, it's very, very profitable to put stents in people and to continue to treat diabetes. Oh, my goodness. The amount of money we spend on diabetes in a year and the management of it is astronomical. The amount I talk to a lot of kids in schools these days.
Mm-hmm.
That's really my new passion, especially down here in Florida, locally, going into the middle schools. Mm-hmm. And I'm sometimes the first person to sit and tell these 13-year-olds that diet and disease are actually connected, that there is a connection there.
Yeah. You know, our educational system's horrible in that regard.
Yeah, it's kind of tough, and I can't really bash my educational system down here. I'm just so happy that they allow me to come in
right. And
talk about these things, and I just am so surprised of what these children visualize, say, diabetes as.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my new mission, is to try to, I go into the schools and tell them, diabetes isn't where you take a pill every day or have to
right. Check
your blood sugar. This is having your legs amputated. This is going blind.
Being on dialysis, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Not all diabetes is controllable. I mean,
no, it's not, especially when it's
little diabetics, and not because they, you know, go off their diet or don't take their medicine. They're just brittle.
Yeah.
So.
It's a very difficult disease to manage, and it has horrendous, horrendous side effects. They almost all die of heart disease, and having your body parts amputated piece by piece is just such a miserable experience. And so some of the most miserable people I see at the hospital, with the exception of the ones that can't breathe, it's all, so much could be fixed. I won't say all of it, but so much of this could be handled if people just ate a better diet, got the chemicals out, exercised
a
little
smoking.
Bit.
Yeah, that's true. There are definitely risk factors for most of these diseases. The thing I'm very concerned about is the influence that nanotechnology and genetically modified foods may have on cancer rates. You know, there's just a whole unknown there, but yet problems with cell proliferation, and then even with EM radiation and cellular telephones, there's problems with increased free radicals, problems with waste accumulation, and the scientific studies showing that in some of these instances, in animal studies, that cancer rates go up because of, you know, problems with cell-to-cell communication and increased free radicals. So, you know, we're messing with a very, very basic, you know, almost intracellular when it comes to nanotechnology. Changes inside the nucleus of the cell may occur with some of the nanotech products that are one of the nanotech silver, for example, is in 236 products according to the registry. You know, we don't know what it does. Now, that's very interesting. You know, it's.
It's shocking that these things are allowed to be developed, put into the food supply, consumed on a massive basis, then we start testing, doing all these tests to find out how bad they really are, and now start working on getting them out of the food supply.
Right.
It's strange.
Well, like I said, there may be another agenda. There may be, it probably is a lot of simply not wanting to pay for the research, or if it's industry funded, not pursuing research that's showing problems. You know, the scientists can push it one way or the other, depending on what the funding source wants it to show. And that's really true of cellular telephones. I interviewed Dr. Carlo, who's the author of Cell Phones. I think it's Invisible Hazards in the World or something like that. But it's on his research he did for the cell phone company, and when it wasn't showing what they wanted to show, he had to go underground. His house mysteriously burnt down, and he had to go underground to write the book. And it was just very interesting that even with all of the controls in place, basically. The money was not directly under the control of the cell phone companies. The FDA was supposed to oversee the whole thing, and they couldn't publish things without it being peer-reviewed. And even with all of that, everything fell apart, and the public never knew the results of the study. Basically, it's that too much use of cell phones can cause neuroepithelial malignancies and acoustic neuromas. So, that's what the research showed, and they certainly, and it also interfered with pacemakers. But they really had a battle over publicity of this, of these findings. And
yeah, that's true across the board. Anytime you're looking at a study, any type of research, you kind of got to find out who funded that research, because all too many times we're finding that the source of the funding has a huge influence over the results of the experiment.
Now, let me tell you a story about breast implants. There's a study that was partially funded by the FDA that was published in the Journal of Rheumatology, I think in 2001. And in this is the only study that studied ruptured implants. All the other ones, implants generally didn't rupture for 15 to 20 years. So, you know, the other studies studied people less than 10 years and sort of found no problems, kind of like cigarette smoking. But if you only studied ruptured women, there was a high degree of association with connective tissue disease and fibromyalgia, which is basically chemical and biotoxicity. So what was interesting is my editor said that study was still up on the FDA website in 2006 when they returned silicone to the market with virtually no other studies to figure out why all those women got sick. I mean, that's pretty ballsy if you ask me.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
crazy.
That's pretty bad.
Yes, it is.
And then the FDA, nine FDA scientists, current and former scientists, blew the whistle on the FDA in April of 2009. They wrote a letter to the president saying that science had taken a backseat to other things, including silicone implants. There were other things like the morning after pill, silicone implants. They listed some things, and there was a lot in the allegations, but that is proof that there are different agendas in the FDA than our public health and safety.
It's unfortunate, but it's been proven time and time again that the corporations, the food corporations, the drug corporations, they are represented by the FDA a lot more than the people, the consumers of the products.
They call it a revolving door. You know, Michael Taylor, who was the attorney and eventual vice president of Monsanto, became employed by the FDA during the time that they were decided not to require labeling of GM foods over the scientists' objections. Because the scientists looked at the scientific studies and said, whoops, this is dangerous. So anyway, it was kind of funny that you can actually follow the revolving door back and forth. But, you know, the point of all this, the point of your movie and the point of my talk is that you really need to know what you're putting in your body. I mean, you can't trust the corporations. You can't trust your doctors don't know. So going to the medical profession and expecting them to tell you this, they don't know. I mean, you and I didn't know until we looked into it. Most of my colleagues don't know anything. They're still eating, you know, donuts and processed foods. I used to think it was really funny. At the heart hospital, every morning we'd have donuts in the doctor's lounge. I used to laugh. Yeah, it's like, isn't this interesting?
I work at the hospital, and I take care of patients, say, that just had a cardiac procedure, just had a stent placed, and the first thing we give them is partially hydrogenated oil. Yep, give them some corn syrup, some MSG, and some hydrogenated oil on their first meal off the table, and we'll see you again in a few months for another stent. But yeah, you're right. It is unfortunate. That is one of the major points here, is that your doctor's not going to tell you this. The government's not going to tell you this. The FDA isn't going to tell you this. Your teachers probably aren't going to tell you. Your parents probably don't know. So it's kind of up to you to do a little bit of research and just think common sense-wise of what you're putting in your body.
Right.
The way I would explain to a 13-year-old when they start asking about different additives, I actually have them stand up in front of a classroom and read labels on different food items, and they sit there and stumble and can't even get through these big, long, you know, 27-letter words and a paragraph of chemicals on their honey bun or something. And I explain to them simply, I don't have to tell you which chemical additive causes which neurological disorder. You don't need to know that. If you can't pronounce it, don't eat it. If it doesn't look like food, it's not. If your grandmother wouldn't recognize it as food, it isn't food. Eat things like an apple or an orange, and you know, just something that is natural. You got to get the chemicals out of your diet. And this is common sense. When you really start thinking about it, you mentioned we live in a toxic environment. You've got the cell phones. You've got toxic water, the fluoride, the air,
plastic.
The food.
Plastic.
It's just we're surrounded with chemicals. We're surrounded by cancer. So the one thing that's easiest to control is what you're putting in your mouth all day. It's just the easiest way.
Yeah. And also what's on your skin. When you put things on your skin, there's two kind of chemicals, as you know, hydrophilic and hydrophobic. Well, there's an awful lot of hydrophobic chemicals, and a lot of hydrophobic chemicals are associated with being carcinogens, especially benzene, toluene, methyl ethyl ketones, you know, all the rings, the polyaromatic rings. And what people need to understand is that these go right through your skin. Some of them go right through gloves. You know, if you can smell it in the air, it is going through things.
Without, if your liver
the protective barriers aren't working, so, you know, just get away from it. So if you read your food labels, you also need to read what's on your personal care products and your environmental cleaning your house cleaning products. My niece just wrote a book called Non-Toxic House Cleaning, where she teaches you to make your house cleaning products from natural things that you can buy and not get chemicals in you. Because it goes right through gloves. You know, it's not, and you can breathe it in. So if you're, like people that work in chemical plants, I had this one woman who came to me. She had six different kinds of cancer before she was 53. Worked in a chemical plant.
Unbelievable.
Like I said, she smelled chemicals all day long. Be careful. Let me tell you, it is not normal to have six different kinds of cancers before you're 53. And she didn't have an immune problem. I mean, it wasn't like she had a known immune problem. She worked in a chemical plant.
Yeah, it's more than obviously environmental factors.
It is.
You got to read the labels on everything. I love what you said about the skin and the absorption. People don't realize that either. We tell people, look for hydrogenated oil. You got to check your makeup, your deodorant, your sunscreen, because it's in all that too. And you're absorbing it
into
your brain and right to your liver, and it's the same as
you look. Yeah, one third of lipstick samples had lead in them. So you swallow it. I mean, you know, you can ingest it with lipstick, you know, because you're licking your lips and you're licking it off, you know. I learned a lot. I mean, I started working on this probably over Christmas and New Year's. Christmas Eve, I was up till 4 in the morning researching this stuff. It's just, so, you know, I'm right with you. I see it all. And what's so interesting is the pattern. There's warnings that we really, and something's coming out of the EPA and the FDA themselves. We really have to study this. This, you know, we really have to pay attention to this. And then, of course, the revolving door starts, and you get people in the FDA that kind of push the scientists aside. And then I have all these FDA statements. We see no reason to label this, or there's no scientific evidence that this is any different than non-GMO foods. You know, and then few years later, or sometimes just a year later, all of the scientific bodies are coming out and saying, this is a real big problem. You know, like the American Academy of Environmental Medicine statements or the Scientific America articles and all these chemistry and environmental groups, and sometimes even political groups that advise the White House come out and say the FDA and the EPA didn't do their jobs. You know, I mean, it's the same pattern again and again. And it's greed, like you said. It is greed.
That's why we named the movie that, Ingredients, with GED. It's just such a big part of all the problems. We're talking about all these different things here, but what's the common denominator? Some would argue that any system or representative that has a lobby system in part to it, it's going to be crooked. How can you have a system where someone can pay to have a decision or a law made in their favor? who's got more money, the people or the companies? Well, who's going to win? It's a no-brainer.
But it's, well, I think we need a something, a law or maybe a constitutional amendment so that it wouldn't be repealed on the precautionary principle. I mean, the precautionary principle was, I think, was first popularized anyway by Rachel Carson Silent Spring. She was a woman who developed breast cancer and learned very early that environmental factors were very critical with breast cancer and warned what would happen if we didn't get control of them with increasing cancer rates. And of course, we didn't, and now we have increasing cancer rates. So the precautionary principle states that in the face of scientific uncertainty, it is our ethical imperative to make sure that things cause no harm before they're released into the general environment or public. Because we can destroy our environment just as easily. All the fish deaths and the bird deaths and the, you know, they might be due to electromagnetic phenomena, weaponry, they might be due to chemicals, they might be due to, you know, GM and or nanotech things. We don't know. I mean, we don't know what they're due to, but we certainly are seeing a lot of effect on the environment. The honeybees, you know, becoming ill with that's been attributed to GM crops. It's been attributed to electromagnetics. Who knows? It might be a combination of everything.
What was that?
It might be a combination of all of that. I mean, things,
yeah.
You know, I studied ecology, you know, I was going to be an ecologist before I was going to be a plastic surgeon. And it's a very holistic thing when you're studying the environment. Everything affects everything else. I mean, look at kudzu in the South. I mean, look at kudzu. They brought kudzu in, and then all of a sudden there's buildings covered with kudzu, you know. Trees are dying because they're covered with kudzu.
Yeah, I believe it's a combination. Like I said before, we do live in a toxic environment. We have so many different things to worry about that we didn't have to, say, 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I hear that a lot of people, because we do a lot of screenings, local screenings, community screenings at schools, mm-hmm. hospitals, churches, libraries, things like that. And people are saying, hold on, we never had to worry about this before. My mother lived to be 90 years old, and she ate bacon and eggs every morning when she woke up. And I said, okay, you're telling me she lived 100 years ago before all these chemicals, and she ate a natural diet. Of course she lived.
Yeah, right, exactly. Although nitrates can cause, are associated with gastric cancer, so, you know, maybe she didn't have that predilection, though. That's one thing we know. So can you give our listening audience the website and how they get your DVD?
Yeah, our DVD can be ordered at ingredientsmovie.com. Remember, it's INGREED. INTSmovie.com. And if you are ordering a copy, if you put Temple of Health Radio Show under your company name, when you're ordering, we'll send you a 2-for-1. Buy one movie, we'll send you 2 copies so you can share one. My wife calls it the buy one, share one. So you get one, you share it with someone else in your
sure.
family that might know this information. And if you're really interested in getting involved and learning more information, I'm sure your listeners are. You do a wonderful job out here getting all this different information out. But if you want to become a fan on Facebook, you know, facebook.com/ingredients,
mm-hmm.
become involved in some of our conversations. So we have 3,000 fans, and we get some really neat conversations going back and forth with a lot of these different things. A lot about chemical food additives primarily, but we do talk about the water and the air and the environment and a lot of different just natural health type of topics.
Would you like to share with the listeners some of the experts that you have on? You have the past president of the American Heart Association and the World Heart Federation and some of the other scientists that, because this is really backed up very much by science, because both, you know, you're an RN and you have a scientific background, and this is what you did. You backed it up with science.
Yeah, we started looking into some research. We got started with D.L. Dewey. David Dewey started blowing the whistle on this a long, long time ago using some research by the godfather of trans fat research is Walter Willett, and that was really a big turning point for us when Dr. Walter Willett from Harvard said, yeah, I'll be in your movie. I'll talk about trans fats on camera. We said, oh, this is not this little short local project anymore. We're going to make a feature film here. And we got up there, and ironically, we ended up talking with Dr. Meir Stamfer, who was the chair of the epidemiology department, and he's a professor of nutrition and professor at the Harvard Medical School and the Harvard School of Allied Health. He is just amazing. He's the number one most quoted scientist for 10 years in a row. They just do so much research up there. They have the funding. They have all the resources that they need. And these guys, what impressed me most is they won't go on the record about something until they have some long-term studies. So many questions that I proposed to them, they said, not enough research, not enough research, not enough research. They don't want to go on the record about anything. But they've started something called the Nurses' Health Study about 30 years ago. Got these nurses to record their health and checkups and record what they ate and their exercise levels and all that. And since then, just more and more people join every year, and it's a 30-year ongoing study. That's where the research on the trans fats come from.
Right.
It's research in the laboratory by the scientists, but it's also these long-term studies that run decades before they talk about it. And then also in the movie, we wanted to talk to the FDA so bad, and we called them.
That was funny.
They just wouldn't respond to us, so we just happened to be in D.C., interviewing Michael Jacobson, who's the director of CSPI, Center for Science in the Public Interest, and we were talking to him about the FDA. He says, hey, do you have an interview with them? Oh, we tried so hard, Dr. Jacobson. He said, why don't you just go there? He said,
That's not going to go.
I'm going to go there right now. We finished the interview. We got in the car. We drove to the FDA headquarters, and we charged the front door with our cameras, and we tried hard, but we couldn't really get much of a comment except from the security officers to getting thrown out, but that's in the movie as well. Fun little scene. And we were fortunate enough to talk to some legislators, Tony Mendoza in California and Kevin Conwell in Ohio that are just enacting the change changing the laws, which is just amazing. California banned the use of trans fats in restaurants. That's a big deal.
And when did that go into effect?
That went into effect just over a year ago. So it's been a solid, over a solid year that they've been banned, but still, you can get them in the California grocery stores. It's just the restaurants that it's enforced in. And
the chain restaurants? Do you think that just because McDonald's in California can't do trans fats, that if I go to McDonald's here in Georgia, I won't get trans fats?
Well, first part of that question is you got to remember the law. So when you say no trans fat, what you're saying is less than half a gram of trans fat per serving.
So it's not really no trans fat.
Well, it's never no trans fats.
Right.
But say if you go to your McDonald's in Florida here, they can serve you as many trans fats as they want.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But in California, they have to follow the no trans fat law, which means less than half a gram per serving and on and on.
Oh, boy.
But really where it's enforced is in the fry oils. Like in New York, when they first did it, it was the restaurant fry oils as they found out where it was a substantial amount of this hydrogenated oil.
Right.
So yes, for a long time, but still, McDonald's will send one fry oil to New York City that doesn't have partially hydrogenated oil, and they will send a different one to everybody else.
Because it's cheaper, right?
Absolutely. It's cheaper.
Right. It must be the money.
It doesn't break down. It doesn't go bad. It's just on the shelf longer. It's not food.
So the original trans fat was Crisco, is that right?
Yes.
You want to tell that story? We have a few minutes left.
Yeah. Had a scientist. No one's ever trying to make food when they come up with these neat little things like aspartame. They're trying to make a drug and find out it's sweet. But anyway, hydrogenated oil was the same thing. And, German chemist invented the hydrogenation process and didn't really know what to do with it. So he brought it over to America and brought it to Procter & Gamble. And Procter & Gamble had been trying to work on some sort of replacement for butter for a while. And they said, wow, we can take this hydrogenated process and move that over to our cottonseed oil and turn liquid cottonseed oil into a solid. And that's how you came up with shortening. Shortening just revolutionized the food process. But now you didn't have to use butter anymore. Butter breaks down.
Yeah, butter becomes rancid. And it's all about processing and making a longer shelf life. Because if you have a short shelf life, you can't make as much money.
And how could you possibly have 40 different crackers on your shelf that can sit there for months and taste exactly the same in every state? That food just to have that branding, that flavor, that taste that doesn't change, and it can sit there forever, and we can ship it all across the country. It's the only way.
It is the only way, because otherwise we're back to locally produced food that probably after a month is going to, you know, change in taste or get moldy or whatever, and you'll have to throw it away. And there's big losses there. I mean, if you haven't sold it, you know, the money goes down the drain if you have to throw the food out.
So, I mean, the answer is we ask for this change. We vote every day at the grocery store with our dollar.
Right, exactly.
If you buy these foods, they will make these foods. If you don't, they won't. If you buy healthier foods, they will make healthier foods.
Right.
It's called supply and demand, and it really, truly works.
It's the only thing that works. Obviously, legislation doesn't get all the transplants out. I mean, even in New York or California. So, you know, the only thing that works is the consumer.
So you got to read your labels, not buy the stuff, and they will stop making it. You got to go to your stores and demand it. If you talk to your grocery store managers, they listen. You tell them they want a product, they get it for you. I mean, a lot of times they want to do business. They're in business to do business. They're in business to make money. So tell them what they should be doing. And we just got to communicate and get the message out there. And I can't stress the importance of getting this information to the kids where it makes the most difference so they can grow up without this. It's like we're poisoning the children and they're growing up and not building their bodies into the healthy adults that they should be, and then they're getting sick and then they're getting educated enough to learn why they're sick, and it's not right.
And it's not only just affecting their bodies with obesity, a huge increase in diabetes and premature heart disease in 20-year-olds. That's what they were finding in that study, the soldier study, where they were looking at the soldiers, I think, killed in Korea, that the majority of them had coronary artery disease in their 20s. That study was during the Korean War, you know, a while ago. So it doesn't take long for these transplants to destroy your vascular system. And remember, it's not just your coronaries, it could be strokes. You know, there's a lot of other things with what we call atherosclerotic peripheral vascular disease. And one of the most common things that it does, and you know this because you take care of these people, is it slowly makes you stupid. You know, it's slowly small strokes, and then you can't think, and then you can't take care of yourself, and then you can't, you know. So essentially, we're also dumbing America down, because if a lot of people are having, you know, cerebral peripheral vascular disease from trans fats, that's a problem. That's a huge problem, because they may not die from it for 15 years, but they'll require constant care. And what's that cost, you know?
So if you're listening out there and you think, oh, this doesn't apply to me because I'm relatively healthy, well, start reading your labels, getting some of these toxins out of your food. You'll feel even better than you do now, and you can preserve this health for a long time to come.
Remember those Korean soldiers thought they were healthy, too. Heart disease doesn't cause, I mean, especially heart disease, may not cause any symptoms until your first heart attack, and I think the statistics are 40% sudden death with your first heart attack. So,
there's nothing... There's nothing killing more Americans than heart disease. It's been the number one for a long time, and we've been combating it, and the numbers don't seem to really be coming down. So something has to have some major, we need some major change here. And I think the diet is the number one way to do it. So get the message out there. We're doing a lot of screening. So anybody out there that's interested in this subject and want to really get the message out, go online to our website and check out. We're under the Buy DVD button. There's all kinds of different options to host local screenings and even some opportunities for We have people that, there's a lot of different movements out there we're finding. I had no idea until the movie was done, and all these people were contacting us from little local gardens and slow foods groups and better school foods groups and just all these little, maybe there are only 25 or 50 people in little communities, but there's just so many of them. And what we offer them is even ways to raise money for their little organization to keep going by doing screenings and selling
right.
tickets and the other stuff. Give us a call if you're interested in getting that message out there. Just and we've got to work together because
yeah,
obviously mainstream media is not selling this message like we are.
No, they're not. They never would do that. They have too much advertising dollars from the food industry. But also, I wanted to say for people in Atlanta, you know, we do the community noetic science on the third Thursday of every month. And, in fact, in February, which is the 17th, we're going to have Gina Jones talking about an ancient esoteric practice called the Cards of Life. So she'll be doing that. But what I'll do is I'll plan to do ingredients as one of the noetic science meetings. And then if you keep an eye on our newsletter, which you can get emailed to you or mailed to you, you can come to our Dunwoody office and watch ingredients. So I'll do that sometime this year. That's always fun. Just
show movies. Yeah, that'll be great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah,
I really appreciate
that.
We'll help get the message out.
It's important. It is. Well, thank you very much, David. Would you give your website one more time?
Sure. Ingredientsmovie.com. It's I-N-G-R-E-E-D, greed spelled out in the middle, ingredientsmovie.com. Check us out there and on Facebook. Become a fan and get involved in all our little organic discussions going on. And don't forget, if you are ordering a copy, put in Temple of Health as your company name, and we will send you two if you order one. If you order two movies, we'll send you four, and so on and so forth.
That's great. Well, thanks, David, for joining me. Next week, we have Jill Mara, Keys to Soul Evolution, The Gateway to the Next Dimension. And then on the 5th, we have Edward Close. Dr. Close is the author of Transcendental Physics. The Truth Convention is the 4th, 5th, and 6th at Center Stage in Atlanta. And David Wilcox, Stephen Greer, he's the head of the Disclosure Project, and many other people will be there. We have Waking Up Blind, A Corporate Cover-Up. Dr. Tom Harbin, who's an ophthalmologist, wrote that book. Dr. Sheely, who's the head of the, or was the founder of the American Holistic Medical Association and a professor of energy medicine, is going to be on talking about the Telomere Project, which is anti-aging, on the 19th. And on the 26th, we have Ivan Rados back, Transform Your Life Through Sacred Geometry. And Dr. Gould is giving a lecture, I'm sorry, Dr. Mike is giving a lecture on unhealthy truth at our Dunwoody office on the 10th, which is a Thursday at 7:30 p.m. For all of this information, you can go to www.templeofhealth.ws. And for the radio show, you can go to plasticos.com under Resources and Radio. Most of the radio shows are archived there. Thanks a lot, David. I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Kolb. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye. We'll talk to everybody next week.